"Only one thing more," said Mr. Lorry, laying stress upon it as a wholesome means of enforcing her attention. "He has been found under another name, his own long forgotten or long concealed. It would be worse than useless now to inquire which, worse than useless to seek to know whether he has been for years overlooked or always designedly held prisoner. It would be worse than useless now to make any inquiries, because it would be dangerous. Better not to mention the subject anywhere or in any way, and to remove him, for a while at all events, out of France. Even I, safe as an Englishman, and even Tellson's, important as they are to French credit, avoid all naming of the matter. I carry about me not a scrap of writing openly referring to it. This is a secret service altogether. My credentials, entries, and memoranda are all comprehended in the one line, "Recalled to life," which may mean anything. But what is the matter? She doesn't notice a word. Miss Manette! Perfectly still and silent, and not even fallen back in her chair, she sat under his hand, utterly insensible, with her eyes open and fixed upon him, and with that last expression looking as if it were carved or branded into her forehead. So close was her hold upon his arm that he feared to detach himself lest he should hurt her. Therefore he called out loudly for assistance without moving. A wild-looking woman, whom even in his agitation Mr. Lorry observed to be all of a red colour, and to have red hair, and to be dressed in some extraordinary tight-fitting fashion, and to have on her head a most wonderful bonnet, like a grenadier wooden measure, and a good measure too, or a great Stilton cheese, came running into the room in advance of the inn-servants, and soon settled the question of his detachment from the poor young lady by laying a brawny hand upon his chest and sending him flying back against the nearest wall. "I really think this must be a man," was Mr. Lorry's breathless reflection, simultaneously with his coming against the wall. "Why, look at you all!" bawled this figure, addressing the inn-servants. "Why don't you go and fetch things instead of standing there staring at me? I am not so much to look at, am I? Why don't you go and fetch things? I'll let you know if you don't bring smelling salts, cold water and vinegar. Quick, I will!" There was an immediate dispersal for these restoratives, and she softly laid the patient on a sofa and tended her with great skill and gentleness, calling her "my precious" and "my bird," and spreading her golden hair aside over her shoulders with great pride and care. "And you in brown," she said, indignantly turning to Mr. Lorry. "Couldn't you tell what you had to tell her without frightening her to death? Look at her with that pretty pale face and her cold hands. Do you call that being a banker?" Mr. Lorry was so exceedingly disconcerted by a question so hard to answer that he could only look on, at a distance, with much feeble sympathy and humility, while the strong woman, having banished the inn-servants under the mysterious penalty of letting them know something not mentioned if they stayed there staring, recovered her charge by a regular series of gradations and coaxed her to lay her drooping head upon her shoulder. "I hope she will do well now," said Mr. Lorry. "No thanks to you and Brown as she does. My darling, pretty!" "I hope," said Mr. Lorry, after another pause of feeble sympathy and humility, "that you accompany Miss Manette to France?"
"A likely thing, too," replied the strong woman. "If it was ever intended that I should go across salt water, do you suppose Providence would have cast my lot in an island?"
This being another question hard to answer, Mr. Jarvis Lorry withdrew to consider it.